Welcome to Talking Story. I'm your host, Lynn Hadley. Our guest today is Helping Hand CEO and founder, Alan Evans. Having overcome his own obstacles of homelessness, incarceration, and addiction, he created a reentry outreach program which serves the homeless in Clatsop, Lincoln, Tillamook, and Yamhill counties in Oregon. Thank you for being with us on Talking Story today, Alan.
Well, thank you for having me.
And stories factor so prominently into what you do with your service to the homeless. Can you share some of the stories that brought you to creating Helping Hands?
Well, yeah, as a child, I lived through some trauma, some devastating trauma. I was sexual and physical abuse as a child. I was in and out of foster care. And off the streets for a long time. And, you know, there were years that I couldn't understand why things happened to me the way they did. You know, why didn't I have parents who fought for me? Why didn't I have people who loved me? And I grew up blaming myself, thinking it was me. And for the years and years that I was on the streets, it didn't matter what door I went into. Everybody told me what they felt I needed for me to change my life. And what was happening on my inside and what they thought was happening on the outside were always two different things. Because I had so many different obstacles, so many things that I had to take care of for me to change my life. And so after years of living on the streets, I found myself homeless here. And I was dragging a bag of clothes down the highway. And I went to every door I could find and said, look, I'm broke, I'm homeless, I'm addicted, I've got mental health issues, I'm hungry. I'm an ex-offender. Help me. And they couldn't. I tried to get ID. They told me I needed a residence. I wanted a residence, but I had no money. Actually, I tried to get food stamps. They told me I needed ID. I went down and tried to get ID. They told me I needed a residence, and I wanted a residence, but I had no money. And at that point, if there wasn't a place that I could walk through the door without a penny in my pocket and receive what I needed, then crime was a win-win situation. I could commit a crime and continue the lifestyle I was leading if I was to sell whatever. And if I got arrested, I'd get three meals and a bed in jail. And in the state of Oregon, when getting arrested becomes getting rescued, something's wrong. And that's what I did. I committed a crime. I got arrested. I got the help I needed. I changed my life. And I went back to the arresting officer and said, I got an idea. I want to start a program. I want to find a place that people could go without a penny in their pocket and receive immediate services. And that's what happened. We started a small facility here in Seaside 18 years ago. And now we house nearly 250 people a night in 11 facilities in four counties.
11 different facilities in four counties. Wow. That's tremendous. What an opportunity to take from such an unfortunate circumstances. I don't know that many people would take that path.
Well, I think everybody wants purpose, right? I mean, what an opportunity to take everything negative that I've ever lived through and teach other people that change is possible. We need purpose in our lives, and everybody does. And, you know, most of the times the way we view people when they're walking down the street and you could tell that they're homeless and they're dragging their bag of clothes or something, we don't, very seldom do we think, I wonder what his story is. We believe it's people's faults for being out there, and it's not. And it's pretty amazing when you can hand another person an opportunity to change their life and give them a little purpose and watch them bloom. It's a pretty spectacular thing to see.
Yeah, that's got to be a real great feeling for you to be able to empower people to find their own way over those obstacles that they come to you with.
Well, yeah. If we can steer people in a different direction. I mean, becoming trauma informed was a really important element for us and our organization. You know, we realize that everybody has a story, and we realize that everybody has different obstacles to reenter society and to be self-sustaining in a community. It's never one thing when you come through a door. So it's not just shelter. It's not just food. It's not just mental health services. It's not just parenting classes. It's not just domestic violence. help. It's usually 5 or 6 or 7 different things that people need assistance for. And when a community comes together and begins to help a person overcome the obstacles in their story, that's when healing happens. That's true treatment, you know, when you can help a number of things and people become successful.
Do you have any numbers as far as like the amount of people you've been able to create outreach and success for as far as moving from homelessness back into fully functioning, sustainable life?
Well, on average, we have about, let's say in Clatsop County, on average a year, we have about 400 to 475 people come through the organization locally. I couldn't give you any hard numbers on reentry because everybody's story is different. You know, some people come in with a full-time job and in their car, and you know, they got evicted from their home because the landlord wanted to raise the rent and got a no-cause eviction. And then they raised the rent to the point where the person, you know, then that person has to compete with our local housing market that's less than 1% availability for affordable housing in our county. And so that person needs a little bit different things than the next person coming in the door. So everybody has a different story. And so that person might shack up with another person and get an apartment together or figure it out. So it's really difficult to give you a hard number on exactly how many people. I mean, for one, only in the last couple of years have we really been tracking things with our database because it's new. The system is new. It's taken us about 3 years to put it together to where we can pull some pretty amazing numbers locally to find out. But our success rate on offering a person an opportunity, it ranges in the 80% range, which is pretty exciting because, for one, a person has to be willing to go through the program. They have to be willing to do that. And so we kind of have a leg up when a person comes in our door because they realize how important it is to be there and the services that we offer. So that person's successful. So we have multiple programs. We got 30-day, 60-day, 90-day, 6-month, and 1-year programs. A person achieving their goal within that first 30 days, you know, over 80% of the people achieve that initial goal of their 30-day program. And they move on to the, you know, 60-day, the 90-day. And so there's success in many levels on what we can offer a person. The most important thing is to offer them tools, right? So things that they didn't know before, how can they overcome an obstacle? And I'll give you an example. When I was in a boys' home in California when I was 11 years old, we used to go to this little pool hall down the street. And this woman used to come in and she'd hand out these little pieces of paper. And she'd say, if you memorize this paragraph, I'll give you 50 cents. And I remember I went back that night. I memorized that paragraph. I got my 50 cents. I bought some Abba Zaba and some Chico sticks. And, you know, 35 years later, I'm in Gearheart. And I have a bucket sitting on the ground. And I have a gun in my mouth because I wanted to die because that's how lost I was. And I remembered what was on that little piece of paper. And it saved my life. And we realize today that it's what we offer a person, whether they use it right now or they use it a year down the road or 2 years down the road. That's the way we rate success today. Can we give people tools that in the right environment they may use that? And so we believe that that's success.
Well, it sounds very successful to me, offering people tools like that.
Yeah.
Does it surprise you how the proximity people are in to, like you say, the raising of a rent, loss of a job? It seems like a minuscule amount that could like shift any of us into those circumstances.
It is. And you know, over the last 18 years, the face of homelessness has changed dramatically. You know, back in, 18, 19 years ago, the streets were full of guys like me, the drug addicts, the people who have mental health issues, you know, I mean, people who kind of chose to stay there because there was some freedom in homelessness back in those days, because you can receive a service here and there. You know, the streets were full of guys just like me. And about 10 years ago, it all changed. You know, the first 7, 8 years we were doing this, we were concentrating on addiction, and we were concentrating on opportunities to help people overcome addictions and maybe get back on their feet in the community. And then I'm not sure if they, some people say it was the crash, you know, about 2009, about 2010 that happened. And pretty soon, you know, average people were losing their homes. And the whole availability, I remember in Seaside when you could get evicted from a house on 10th Avenue and go down and rent another house on 7th Avenue. I mean, you went from one place to another and you hope they didn't catch up. It's not that way anymore. And I'll give you a for instance, we had a mother came to us a couple years ago. She had a $13 an hour job. She had a house payment. I mean, not a house payment, but a car payment, less than $100. An insurance payment, less than $100 a month. And she had 2 kids. She worked a $13 an hour job. And that girl came to us in July because she lost her place to live. And for her to keep her job, she had to get daycare for both of her children. So she had a $13 an hour job. Daycare is $3.50 per child. So right off the top, there's $7 an hour out of her pay. And so after taxes, she made less than $2 an hour to pay her rent and her utilities and buy food for her home. And it was impossible to do. Those are the stories of the people who are showing up on our doors today. We had an 18% increase in senior citizens needing our assistance last year. And this year, our number looks to be higher than that. So people with fixed incomes that are getting pushed out of the places that they have to live because they can't afford the stuff. And those are the stories of the people that are coming in our doors today, this 30% increase in families needing assistance. So we get more mothers with children and families and people who work full-time jobs who still can't pay their rent. So that face of homelessness has changed dramatically. And that's why we can't mold into one thing that we can offer a person. We have to kind of go by their story to see what it is we can help them with.
Wow. It must be difficult in the face of things. I mean, sometimes it isn't even an incident or an accident that takes you there. It's just the circumstances. And to be able to offer assistance is wonderful, but to not see that in society at large, that situation is shifting at all to improve on the whole, does it feel sometimes overwhelming for you that way?
No, I have to be careful how I answer this. I have faith, right? And I believe that at the end of the day, when we heal our heart, when we heal the inside of what's happening, the outside changes. So the way we view things are a little bit different. This is no different than, you know, I've lived through some tough stuff in my life, but I can tell you communities are coming together to find answers. And we make the biggest changes in the toughest places we are. You know, it's in those places when we realize we have to change the way we see things and change the way we do things that it changes. And that goes for communities as well. You know, Clatsop County is an amazing county. I work in several of them. By far, this is probably the most developed trauma-informed county that our organization has an opportunity to work in. So there's hope, and there's always hope, and people always want hope.
Well, now's a good time to remind folks that they're listening to Talking Story. I'm your host, Lynn Hadley, and we're here today with Alan Evans, the CEO and founder of Helping Hands. So 2004 is when Helping Hands started, or was that I know I've heard you speak before when things started out in a different frame of thugs with hugs. Thugs not on drugs. Help me out here.
Thugs off drugs.
Okay.
Well, at least you didn't say thugs on drugs, because that's what some people said, right? So in those days, we wanted something catchy enough so that the knucklehead, the people who were on the bottom of the barrel, who couldn't find treatment, couldn't access treatment nowhere, were willing to come to our door, and together, collaboratively, we could help you at least give you some tools to overcome addiction. Because, you know, in those days, most of the people we worked with were either getting out of jail or coming off the streets, couldn't find detox, couldn't find treatment, couldn't have access to it. Single men couldn't even get OHP in those days to get treatment. So we wanted to make it one of those. I don't know how I came up with the name, but it was a good one, right? But the truth was, as soon as we opened our door, people showed up. And so it started off with that element. And then, like I say, about a little over 10 years ago, our facility in Seaside, moms began to show up with children. And people started to show up, and they didn't feel safe because they didn't feel like they qualified to be in a drug rehab style program. And that's when we made the shift to change the name. And be a little bit more inclusive for everybody to have an opportunity. So there's some growing pains, and there's a couple other things too. So if you're a homeless, ex-convict, drug addict, and you run an organization called Thugs Off Drugs, we found out that people don't trust you with their money, right? They're not saying, let's give them $100,000 and I'm sure they're going to take care of it, right? So we had to reframe everything to do the right thing. To be accountable, to be transparent, to smartly let people know that your money that you donate to us reaches the service, and have a way to tell that story. And we've done a pretty good job at making that happen. And plus, our organization is ran by brilliant people, and I'm not one of them. I'm surrounded by brilliant people, right? I have a story of hope. I do. But more brilliant people believe in this than I ever thought possible. And because of that, our team is A plus, and I'm pretty blessed for that.
Earlier you mentioned that Clatsop County was very kind of in tune, trauma speaking wise, with what's going on. Do they show that in financial support as well?
Well, you know, we always have, well, I mean, we do pretty good. Financial support is really important. The education piece, and collaboratively, the county itself. I think more people over the last 10 years have begun to give yearly to our organization. And the one thing we always have the ability to do is we could take them down to our facility and we can walk them in. And we're never afraid to show people how we do what we do, what our cost is for us to do what we do. And you could visibly see how a dollar helps a person that walks in our door. And so more people have trusted us to give us their money and to donate to our organization, because they realize that dollar reaches the person and it's not getting tied up someplace in staffing or something like that.
Let's take it down to the story level. That is obviously very important to what you're doing, to understanding that, to not just sort of making everybody fit into the same program and just dragging them through. How do people respond when they realize that they're being listened to at that level and being put into a situation of love?
Well, I think that, you know, there's not a lot of organizations out there that you walk in the door and you trust what they're going to give you. And I know that from being on the other side. We have to build a level of trust. And for one, when you're met at the door, you're met at a door from people who have been there before. That's really important. And we always ask, how you doing and what's your story? Our initial evaluation is like an IEP in school, right? We find the obstacles that you face. We listen to your story, and we don't ask you for a cent when you walk in. We say, we're going to help you. And this is what we're going to do to help you. And you're surrounded by people who have all lived through the same thing or similar to the same thing as you are. And then once we get that initial evaluation done and they see the roadmap that we're going to help them walk through together, trust begins to happen because they can see that they're capable of doing it. And it's pretty amazing to see the light bulb come on. I mean, it really is. And most people break down. I mean, they've been scared for a long time. I remember this lady telling me, she said, you know, I remember when the door closed and I got locked out of my house by the sheriff's department. And when I turned around for the first time in my life, I did not know what I was going to do. I did not know where I was going to sleep. I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. That is a very frightening place for people to be. And to finally be able to put your feet on the ground and know that you're surrounded by people that have been through the same thing and you have this opportunity and you can see this climb, to watch the relief in her eyes was a pretty amazing thing to see.
It's got to be amazing to see people learn to love and care for themselves where they... because other people had faith that they could do it.
Yeah, and you know, and we say this a lot. We're going to love you until you love yourself, right? I mean, if we can show that at our door, people begin to trust earlier. And then, you know, our facilities. So here, let's say we have 50 people in our building here. And you're surrounded by people with that. It's a good feeling to come in and all of a sudden go, I got this, you know, and eventually learn to love themselves, because most people carry trauma with them and they believe that the things that has happened to them in their life are their fault. And they're unlovable and they feel unlovable and they don't deserve love. And to watch it begin to happen and see that light come on and see that it's possible. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I love your line. And I don't mean to say it like it's just a line, but your past mistakes are meant to guide you, not define you.
Absolutely.
That really says heaps.
Well, I think that we learn the biggest lessons in our life from the toughest places we are. I mean, we don't learn the impact of life changes because everything's going good, right? We learn the most important things we learn in our life come in tough places where we're at. Those attitude changes, those shifts of heart, all of those important things don't happen because everything's going good. They happen because they're not. And they're not meant to define us. They're meant to guide us. If you touch a stove once, you don't want to touch that stove again. I touch it two or three times, but besides the point, you get where I'm going with it. Everybody has a past. Everybody has a story. And if they tell you they don't, they're full of it. Everybody has a story. All of us. And we're no different than that person walking down the street.
Well, there, in looking up various efforts through Helping Hands in Seaside and Tillamook, it hasn't always been smooth sailing as far as keeping the organization, you know, healthy and growing. It seems like there have been obstacles in that path as well. Does
Absolutely.
That surprise you that people aren't more welcoming to having such an organization?
No, and I'll tell you, when it first started, I remember Mark Whistler asking me, how do you plan to house people that have no money with no money, Alan? And I said, I don't know, but I know it needs to be done. There were times in the beginning of this organization where we didn't know how we were going to pay the electricity. We didn't know how we were going to pay the gas. I remember having a checkbook in my back pocket and the gas guy would be coming over to turn the gas off at one of the houses. And I'd write him a check and I'd be praying that check cleared. We never bounced a check. How the heck it happened is beyond me. And in the very beginning, If you're trying to house people that have no money, you have very little money, very few donations, you don't know how you're going to do it, but you know there's this gigantic need there. When business people would join our board of directors, they would look at our books and they look at our plan and they'd say, "This is impossible, Alan." And I would say, "No, it isn't. I don't know. I don't have an answer for it, but no, it isn't." Luckily, we grew through those growing pains. And luckily, people showed up right at the most important time to give. We spent probably close to 10 years of our organization trying to figure out how to dig ourselves out of the hole that we dug trying to assist people. And just a little while back, a few years back, it all changed. People began to see the need. They began to see the importance of it. They began to see the cost of it, and they knew the money was going to that place. And we began to become self-sufficient, and that's pretty exciting.
Yes, it is. It's tremendous. And what are the future plans? Do you have anything you're focused on?
Well, I would say that, you know, we want to provide the best services we possibly can. And as that face of homelessness changes, so do people's needs. So it's not just the addicted or people with mental health issues showing up at our door. People show up with all different kinds of obstacles now. You know, trying to reenter a person who's 65 years old, who can't work, who's on a fixed income, and we want them to be self-sufficient in the community. See, our challenges change. So our need changes a lot. And with that, we need to have the right people on our team providing those services for people. So as the story changes, so does our staffing. And so as we're identifying different obstacles that we're faced with today, we realize that we have to attack those with different staffing opportunities. And so with that, there's a raise in cost for us to be able to provide the best services we can possibly serve for somebody. And there's a cost to that. So, you know, we're always trying to convince people to donate to this need. And so that's the direction we're going. Our ultimate goal is to provide the best services, but there's a cost with that. And so we're still looking to raise money.
All right. And along that line, in this month of giving, I like to think Thanksgiving is a good time. Of course, you probably like to think every month is a good time for giving. Can you give us some details on how and where people can go to support your efforts through Helping Hands?
Yeah, if you want to learn more about us, you can go to www.helpinghandsreentry.org. Helpinghandsreentry.org. You can learn about us and you can learn ways to give. You can also contact us through there, and we would love to give you a tour of our facilities. And we'd love for you to see firsthand the children running down the hallways or the people that are knitting in one of the rooms. You know, we love to show that piece of it off, and we would love the opportunity to be on your donor list. We'd love people to give to us, and we'd love to tell the story of where that went. We have Homeless for the Holidays that comes out these next 2 months, and those will be hitting the airways here real soon, and people have an opportunity to give that way as well.
Well, I would like to thank you so much, Alan, for being here today and informing us of all your great work helping folks in the community overcome obstacles.
Thank you for having me. Have a wonderful day.